Chapter 35. The man floated high above the cobalt blue waters of Lake Tahoe, suspended from the parasail under a red and white canopy that billowed over his head like an old-fashioned round parachute. He sat in a reclining skyrider chair attached by a tow line to the moving winch boat 200 feet below. The rider clicked on his handheld radio. "Let's go around for one more pass, Joe." Zavala, who was at the wheel of the boat, waved to show that he had heard Austin's instruction. He put the paranautic winch boat into a big slow turn that would take them back along the lake's California side. The maneuver gave Austin a sweeping view of the lake. Lake Tahoe is on the California-Nevada border in the Sierra Nevada, about 23 miles southwest of Reno. Ringed by rugged mountains that are covered with snow in the winter, Tahoe is the largest alpine lake in the United States. It is more than a mile high, more than 1,600 feet deep. The lake is 22 miles long and about a dozen miles wide and lies in a fault basin created by ancient forces deep in the earth. Two-thirds of its 200-square-mile area is in California. At the north end, it empties into the Truckee River. At the south end, a river of money empties into the coffers of the high-rise gambling casinos at Stateline. The first white man to discover the lake was John C. Fremont, who was on a surveying mission. To English speakers, the Washoe Indian name for the lake, Dao, which means much water, sounded like Tahoe, and the pronunciation stuck. As the parasail brought Austin around in a wide arc, he concentrated his attention on a particular stretch of shoreline and the dark forest rising behind it, imprinting the image on his mind. He would have preferred to use a video or still camera instead of his imperfect memory, but traffic this close to Gogstad's lair was sure to come under close scrutiny. Any undue interest on his part, such as pointing a camera lens in the wrong direction, would set off alarms. He drifted past a long pier that jutted from the rocky shore. A powerboat was tied up at the pier. Behind a boathouse or storage shed, the black rocks rose at a sharp angle, then leveled off into a heavily wooded natural tableland. Several hundred yards back from shore, the land rose again in thick forest. The towers, roofs, and turrets, peeking above the tall trees, reminded Austin of the castle ramparts in a grim fairy tale. Austin's eye was drawn by sudden movement. Several men in dark clothes had run out to the end of the pier. He was too far away to see details, but he wouldn't be surprised if pictures of him parasailing wound up in a Gogstad family album. The pier disappeared in his wake as the winch boat towed him another mile south. When they were safely out of view, he gave Zavala the okay to haul him in. The winch pulled the skyrider in like a boy reeling in a kite. The reclining chair splashed down and floated in the water. Austin was grateful he wasn't using the old harness-style rig, which would have dunked him in the lake. Even in summer, the water temperature was in the 60s. "See anything interesting?" Zavala asked as he helped Austin back into the winch boat. "There's no welcome mat on the doorstep, if that's what you mean." "I think I saw a welcoming committee on the dock. They came charging out the minute we did our second flyby. We were right about the tight security." They had assumed the compound would be well guarded and that there would be no point sneaking around. Reasoning that the obvious was often the most innocuous, they had flashed a wad of bills and their NUMA IDs and persuaded the owner of the parasail and the winch boat to spare his equipment for a few hours. They implied that they were investigating the mafia, which was not implausible given the nearness to the gambling casinos. Since business was off and he stood to make more in the deal than he earned in a week, he went along with the deal. Austin helped Zavala stow the skyrider and parasail. Then he opened a waterproof bag and dug out a sketch pad and pen. Apologizing for his draftsmanship, which was really quite good, he drew several sketches of what he had seen from the air. He had brought along the satellite photos Jaeger provided and compared the sketches to them. At the top of the bluff, the staircase from the dock connected with a walkway. This, in turn, widened into a road that led to the main complex. A spur from the road shot off to a helicopter pad. "A full frontal waterborne assault is out of the question," he said.
"Can't say I'm disappointed. I haven't forgotten our shootout in Alaska," Zavala said.
"I had hoped to see down into the water. In the old days, the lake was as clear as crystal. But the runoff from all the development around the shores has clouded up the water with algae growth." Zavala had been studying another photo. After their strategy meeting at NUMA headquarters, Austin called up a NOAA satellite photo of Lake Tahoe. The shot showed the water temperature of the lake in colors. The lake was almost entirely blue except for one spot along the western shore where the red shade denoted high temperatures. The heated water was practically under the Gogstad Pier. It was similar to the heat pulse in the ocean off the Baja coast.
"Pictures don't lie," Zavala said. "There's always the possibility of a hot spring."
Austin frowned.
"Okay, say you're right, that there's an underwater facility like the one in the Baja. There's one thing I don't understand. We're talking about a desalting plant. This is a freshwater lake."
"I agree, it doesn't make sense. But there's only one way to find out for sure. Let's head back and see if our package has arrived."
Austin started the engine and pointed the winch boat toward South Lake Tahoe. They skimmed over the intense blue waters, and before long they were pulling into a marina. A lanky figure stood at the end of a finger pier waving at them. Paul had stayed on shore. His wound was still too tender to allow him to bounce around in a boat. As they pulled up to the slip, he grabbed the line with his good hand and tied them off.
"Your package has just arrived," he announced. "It's in the parking lot."
"That was fast," Austin said. "Let's take a look." He and Zavala set off toward the parking lot.
"Wait," Paul said.
Austin was eager to check out the delivery.
"We'll fill you in later," he said over his shoulder.
Paul shook his head.
"Can't say I didn't try to warn you," he muttered.
The flatbed truck was pulled up off to the side. The object on the trailer was about the shape and size of two cars, one behind the other. It was covered with padding and dark plastic. Austin had moved in for a closer look when the passenger door of the truck opened and a familiar figure stepped out. Jim Kontos, skipper of the Sea Robin, strolled over with a grin on his face.
"Uh-oh," Zavala said.
"Jim," Austin said, "what a nice surprise."
"What the hell is going on, Kurt?"
The grin had vanished.
"It was an emergency, Jim."
"Yeah, I figured it was an emergency when Rudy Gunn called in the middle of sea trials and told me to ship the sea bus out to Tahoe ASAP. So I just tagged along on the ride in from San Diego to see who was on the receiving end."
Austin noticed a picnic table and suggested they sit down. Then he laid out the situation, using the photos and drawings as visual aids. Kontos sat silently through the entire explanation, his dark features growing graver with each added detail.
"So there you have it," Austin said. "When we saw that there might be only one way in, we checked on the nearest submersible to do the job. Unfortunately, it happened to be the one you were testing."
"Why play blind man's bluff?" Kontos said, referring to daring covert underwater operations during the Cold War. "Why not just go in?"
"First of all, the place has better security than Fort Knox. We checked on land access. The complex is surrounded by razor wire fence rigged to set off alarms if you so much as breathe on it. The perimeter is heavily patrolled. There is only one access road in and out. It runs through dense forest and is heavily guarded. If we send a SWAT team in with guns blazing, it's likely someone would get hurt. Beyond that, what if we're wrong about the whole thing? That the women are not being held there, and what's behind all those fences is perfectly legal?"
You don't think that's the case, do you?
No, I don't.
Kontos gazed out at the sailboats peacefully gliding across the lake, then turned to Paul, who had joined them at the table.
Do you think your wife is in there?
Yep, I have every intention of getting her out.
Kontos noted Trout's arm in its sling.
I'd say you could use an extra hand, and your friends here will need some help launching the sea bus.
I designed it, Zavala said.
I'm well aware of that, but you haven't been the one testing it, so you don't know the quirks. For instance, the batteries are supposed to be good for 6 hours. They barely make it past 4. From what you say, this facility is quite away from here. Have you given any thought to how you're going to get it to the launch point?
Austin and Zavala exchanged an amused glance.
As a matter of fact, we have already lined up a delivery system, Austin said. Would you like to see it?
Kontos nodded, and they got up from the table and walked through the parking lot to the dock. The closer they got to the water, the more puzzled was the expression on Kontos's face. Used to Numa's state-of-the-art equipment, he was looking for something like a high-tech barge fitted out with cranes. There was nothing like that.
"Where's your delivery system?" he said.
"I think I see it coming in now," Austin said.
Kontos looked out at the lake, and his eyes grew wider as the old-fashioned paddle-wheel tour boat made its way in their direction. The vessel was painted red, white, and blue, and decorated with bunting and fluttering flags.
"You're kidding," he said. "You're going to launch from that? It looks like a waterborne wedding cake."
"It is pretty festive. The old girl makes the trip from one end of the lake to the other every day. No one gives it a second look anymore. It's the perfect cover for a covert operation, don't you think, Joe?"
"I've heard they serve a pretty good breakfast aboard," Zavala said with a straight face.
Kontos stared grimly at the approaching vessel. Then, without warning, he wheeled about and headed for the parking lot.
"Hey, Captain, where are you going?" Austin called after him.
"Back to the truck to get my banjo,"